Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 62 of The Roundtable. I'm here with Andy McCullough, Mark Carrig. Mark, what does your shirt mean? That's an interesting shirt.
Yes, I am selling my house, and I just wanted to let the roundtable heads know that it's on the market. That's all. It just so happens to be Kelly Green. Wild coincidence. No, my brother dared me to wear this. So,
for the podcast listeners, it's the Oakland Cell shirt.
That's it. So I did it. Now get off my back, Jay.
I mean, it's a good shirt. It's just it's a classic. It's an instant classic. You know, that oxymoronic instant classic, simple, to the point, correct. It has all the key components.
Hey, it's already being ripped off. Like, the whole concept of what they did is just being lifted by, like, you know, it's like classic Yankees nonsense. They can't figure out stuff on their own, so they got to steal things from other teams and do it worse. And so, you know, there's a Fire Brian Cashman night that they're organizing, which is just like, you know, Microsoft workers going on strike for, you know, increase in pay. Like, it's just like, okay, sure, yeah, whatever. They think that this is going to have the same ground roots effect. I think it's going to be hysterical. But anyway.
I just want to say we support the striking Microsoft workers as the only pro-labor podcast. Andy, how you doing?
Is Microsoft on strike?
I just made that up because I'm sure those folks are paid pretty well already.
That would explain my audio issues from week to week.
Ooh.
Andy, no, I think it's really awesome, you know, that Mark and enough people to almost fill half of a big league stadium have those shirts. I think it's really charming. You know, it's a nice movement.
God, I love that. He's the best heel ever.
Remember when the commissioner did that? That was awesome.
Dude, that was great. That's like dribbling, like having a kid in the stands dribble a basketball 10 times for $500 and then kicking it away at 9. Like, that's how good Rob Manfred is. Like, oh, it's
Rob
so
Manfred.
Great.
Yeah.
The billion dollar man, Rob Manfred.
Yeah, right. The $11 billion man, 17, depending on how often you've spoken to Scott Boras recently.
Who's Virgil? Never mind. Let's not even.
Let's move on. Yeah. Hey, wait. So they're doing a Fire Brian Cashman night?
They are. Yeah. Fire Brian Cashman night, apparently, at the ballpark.
That's a little excessive, isn't it?
What's excessive about it? I'm curious.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if I was the steward of a franchise that had had a winning record 30 seasons in a row and I was four games under, I feel like that was a little tough.
Let's see. He was their general manager in 1998. Let me see what's happened to the Yankees since then. Oh, it's actually been pretty freaking good. Like, I get it. I get it. But, like, I also really don't get it. Like, that is some real... it's not even first world problems. It's just no perspective. None.
I mean, look, the Yankees are a prisoner of their own success. And they've conditioned their fan base to expect that. But that's also, you know, like, hey, sorry, you're the Yankees. Like, tough shit. And I think as Mark will get into, because he's, you know, thought about this a lot more deeply, you know, he covered the Yankees for, you know, quite a bit of time and understands sort of the original sins of kind of where they're at, right? Like, they are being judged by a different standard because they've earned that. They are a better run franchise than the overwhelming majority of the competition. But they still have, as you look at the big league roster and the minor league system and the history, recent history of being unable to develop their own prospects, some real problems. And so, Mark, you take the stage. I would just like to say that I am a winner and wins matter. All you, Mark.
Boy, that really made the rounds on social media, you guys. You guys had a little scuffle. But anyway, you look at the Yankees, and they're the team of the 20th century. And when you'd say that about them, that used to be a compliment. And now it's an insult, all right? Like, the further away you get from that time period, the more and more you realize a couple of things. And the first one is this idea of framing it like they're some kind of passive victims of their own success, I think is wrong. I think they have built their entire brand on selling that they're excellent, that they're different, that they're exceptional, and they're not. They're like Cadillac in the 80s, right? You start making crappy cars, like, your brand takes a hit, and you got to figure out a way to fix it. Their brand is taking a massive hit, and this is not some, like, passive thing where, oh, it's just their own success swallowing them up, and, oh, the fans don't have perspective. The reason they don't have perspective is the New York Yankees. They sell this shit constantly. You walk into their ballpark, and the first hour before the game is just videos, hype videos, about how great the 20th century was. Okay? They sit there and they can all tell you how many pennants they've won, how many World Series they've won. And if you don't know, they'll remind you within the first 5 seconds you walk into their ballpark. And that's what they should do. They've earned that. And that's their marketing thing. This is what their brand is. So after watching all of this for all those years I covered the team, it's hard for me to hear it framed as this is some sort of passive thing in which people have lost perspective. That's bullshit. The reason they don't have perspective is the Yankees. It's part of their brand. They wanted this. So you can't sit there and sell this shit to people and then all of a sudden be like, this is insane. They're calling for Brian Cashman's head. He's been really good for 30 years. Guess what? He's nowhere close to the standard that they themselves have set. And especially when you look at this season. They're nowhere close to it.
First of all, okay. Grant, do you think it's interesting that management Mark thinks we shouldn't talk about the past at Yankee Stadium, sort of like John Angelos feels with the Orioles broadcast?
Wow, that's a cheap-ass shot.
They won 99 games last year, and they won 92 games the year before that. And in the full season before that, they won 103. And in the full season before that, they won 100. So, like, this is a very well-run organization. In certain ways. However, what we should talk about, right, is the failure of the baby bombers, right? That's kind of what this all stems from, right? That's what you've been talking about, you know, for years now. That's
saying it for a long time.
We've been writing about it for years and years. Is the organization's inability to overcome basically the failure of the baby bombers, right? That generation of players. Like, is that enough that you feel like the regime should move on? They should, like, get new people in charge?
That's a great question. I don't know. Okay? I actually, and this is going to enrage people. There's this narrative that sprouted in New York that Cashman has an army of, like, media allies, and that's the reason he clings to power, right? Like, that he's... But Grant's like, what? Yeah, like, that's what's gone on here. Like, if you look at social media and you look at some really vocal Yankee fans, that's their whole thing.
Brian Cashman's the general manager of the Yankees. They're a team that plays in the American League East.
I'm on Wikipedia. You don't have to tell me.
Sabian works for him now. Anyway. Right.
So, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now you know.
Do they have Pablo Sandoval?
Yeah. But, is that your Grant impression? That's pretty funny. But, yeah, so it's hard to answer that because, like, all the things you're saying are true. But I think, you know, Brian Cashman's specialty is being an administrator, a manager, right? Like, Cashman doesn't have a scouting background. He didn't play. Like, his literal job, his stock in trade, is being able to take all of these disparate groups and make them work together. Like, that's his whole thing. And, you know, and I've written about this before, he spent literally 20 years marshaling slowly but surely his power to the point where he could finally consolidate it all, where he, you know, it was no longer, you know, George Steinbrenner worked with factions. He loved factions, and he thought it was healthy for people to be fighting with each other. And Brian Cashman did the opposite, where he consolidated power. Now he's got a, you know, relatively small circle of people that he's going to, and they all have the same ideas. So what has the result been after marshaling all of that? Zero world championships. Well, I take it back. One. 2009. By then, he'd already sort of done that. But really, that's it. So if you're going to measure yourself on winning the whole thing, they haven't even won a pennant since then. All right? Like, it's not like they've had, you know, Red Sox-like heartbreaks, gotten to the World Series, and then pissed it away. Like, you know, back in the day. They haven't even had that. In fact, what they've had is they've had rivals pass them. All right? And it feels like they're in a constant game of catching up to other people. And so the baby bomber's failure, I think, is a combination of things. The way they kind of generally how it worked was they thought in this young group of players they could kind of get out under from their financial issues as far as like resetting the tax and all that stuff. So at various junctures in the last 5 years, they've chosen not to spend the way that they could spend. I think that's what killed them. Because at the end of the day, like even this offseason, they ran it back with the offense. They ran it back. And now they're, oh, well, how did this happen? Well, they were old when you decided to run it back. They got older. Like that's what happened. And then Judge has a freak injury, which they're always going to be sort of tied to that. That's part of the bargain with Aaron Judge. Great player, all that. Everyone knows it. But what, you know, you also know that he might not be on the field. And then they go and sign a pitcher that other teams had, like, you know, pretty much ruled out because the injury risk was too great. So that's where they spent their money. Carlos Rodon. But then, you know, in the last couple of years, who have been free agents? Manny Machado, think he could help him now? Bryce Harper, think he could help him now? Okay, Shohei Ohtani is going to be a free agent, and no one's talking about the Yankees. So what's happened is they thought, with this young core group of players, that they would, you know, have the finally be able to sort of get to a place where they're not just throwing money at the roster all the time. They were wrong. They didn't adjust. Here you are. Yeah, I think that's what's gone on. And that's rough. So when people go, well, how do you should get rid of this guy and all this stuff, I think the biggest argument you could make in favor of it is that that's fundamentally your job as a GM. Is to change with the conditions, is to make the adjustments. They did not. They have, in fact, just doubled down, tripled down on their beliefs, which is how you end up with a lineup exclusively of right-handed hitters who are old and miss the ball a lot. I don't understand it. You know, Joel Sherman had a column a couple weeks ago that was really had some really sharp points in it. One of them is that Aaron Boone, every night at the lectern, talks about lining up his bullpen for lanes to attack the other lineup. Okay? He's looking for specialized lanes. Right matchup, right pitcher, right lane. But he's got a lineup that's the same lane every night.
Yeah, but when you've got, like, that huge, cavernous right field of Yankee Stadium, you don't want to put left-handers there. I mean, it's just too hard for them to hit.
Exactly. Like, duh. And that's what it's hard to understand, I think, is it's like, you know, obviously there's some really smart folks working over there. And like, it's very easy to dunk on them now and pull the whole, oh, stupid nerds thing. Like, I think it's tired. All right. Like, I think there are lots of reasons why they're in this. It is not like some total over-reliance on analytics strictly. I don't believe that. I think that's a really easy thing to say. I think what's happened is, like, you got a guy who's been managing that franchise for a really long time. And I think, like most human beings, after a while, you know, like maybe another argument for why you should at least consider it is like maybe it's just been too long. And there's something to the you know, idea that you need a new voice and need some new ideas and need someone that just sort of like shuffle it a little bit. Okay. And that's not to say that, that Brian Cashman's done a bad job. Like if you look at the in total, obviously he's been really, really good. But yeah, I mean, there's
he's
a reason.
He's one of the greatest general managers of all time.
He has, right. And also, like, we've seen people in that category overstay where they've been. And this is exceptional how long he's been there, man. Like, so that, and those two points are not related, by the way. You can be one of the best to ever do it and also overstay your welcome. And maybe that's what's happened here.
I don't disagree with that. I will say how much you can put the lineup on his plate. You know, you can attribute the right-handedness of that lineup and say, yeah, this is a problem. You should have foreseen that. But how much demerits are you giving him for Luis Severino becoming like literally the worst pitcher in baseball, for Nestor Cortez being ineffective and hurt, for Clark Schmidt regressing? It's just the pitching has gone kerflooey, except for the one guy he brought in with a bunch of money, Gerrit Cole. How much of that is the system and how much of that is just baseball finally pantsing the Yankees in the same way that it pantses a lot of other teams around the league?
St. Petersburg, Florida. The pitching goes kerplooey every year.
Fair enough.
Every Fair year. Enough. Look in your own division. Every year, so-and-so's got TJ. So-and-so's going to miss significant time. And what do they do, Grant? What do they do? Do we go down to their factory and produce five more? And it might not be a guy that gives you seven, but boy, he's pretty good for four. They figure it out.
I do think the Rays have reached a point where they may have smoked them if you've got them so much that they've run out of M's to smoke. There's a lot of broken arms there.
A lot.
However, I understand the point you're making, and I do think, you know, Grant, what you're saying, you know, about like Severino, I think the frustration from Yankees fans is more just that he was extended and given, you know, they was signed before free agency to a deal that kind of locks them into trying to work with him, you know, kind of in the same way that they, you know, they took out a deal on Aaron Hicks because it was like slightly below market value, and they ended up with like a 7-year commitment to, you know, a guy who's just his ability kind of. I am really torn on this because they are unwatchable. Like, they are a really challenging baseball team to try and take in as a consumer. But they are also the same organization that won all those games that I mentioned, you know, earlier. This was the same team that, if you go to Fangraphs projections, who was projected to win the American League East? It was the Yankees, right? They have certain things that they do really well, specifically on the pitching side. What confuses me is the rigidity of their offensive approach. That is just genuinely confusing. You know, I wrote about this last year, and one of the reasons they are unwatchable is because a lot of their guys make outs in the same way. It was sort of an issue they had at the beginning of last year before they took off, and then they cooled down, but whatever. And I was talking to, you know, a bunch of GMs, a bunch of managers, you know, about like, do you think your lineup needs diversity? And every manager was like, yeah, you need a bunch of different guys to do a bunch of different things. And then you ask GMs, they're like, no, I want good players. And I do think there's a gap there. I don't think you have to have a lineup of nine different players with nine different approaches, but I don't think you can put together a successful lineup of nine approaches. I do think you need some sort of diversity of handedness, of what you're trying to accomplish, all that stuff. Otherwise, it's like Mark said with the lanes. There's one lane for this team every single night, slider down and away.
Yeah, the Houston Astros figured it out, by the way.
Yeah, the Astros figured it out several years ago.
Yeah, that's why they kick their ass all the time, because the Astros like hardwired themselves to kick their ass. It wasn't that hard to do. They figured it out.
So I think that the lack of diversity in the lineup can work during the regular season, but it was very apparent year after year in the postseason to watch teams with the built-in rest days, the built-in off days, just to take apart that lineup. And you've got, you know, your whole staff of quants now focused on one team rather than spread out a little bit and trying to figure things out. And it seemed like a team that was built to fail in the postseason year after year. I'm surprised that it's failing now, but I mean, I had more concerns with the postseason all those years.
I think the stuff about like three true outcomes hitters in the postseason, like there was a bunch of writing on that 10 years ago that it was that it didn't work in October, essentially. But then everyone just kind of agreed that we have no idea why teams win, you know, in October. They're just sort of like, they won. This team won because they scored more points this year. That's actually the reason, you know, and that's usually why the best way to win in October is win a baseball game. But I do think that some of that, like, preliminary, you know, junk science, secret sauce stuff, like, it had some merit. And some of that, you know, based on the smell test, suggested that three true outcomes hitters who tend to, you know, feast on mistakes, you know, are more prone to getting, you know, just carved up in October.
Luckily, the Yankees won't be having to worry about their shit not working in the playoffs this year, because they're not making the playoffs. Now, here's...
Not with that attitude.
Here's the thing, all right? We're talking about, like, the regime and should there be a change or not. Like we said, the failure of the baby bombers manifested in the fact that they thought they could just stop spending the way they was spending money before. There were certain opportunities they let go by because of luxury tax considerations or whatever. You know, Yankee fans know this one. Justin Verlander was someone they could have gotten in a trade. They wouldn't pay the freight. They wouldn't, so they didn't get him. Okay, and that could have changed the trajectory of the last couple of years. Okay, I think we can all agree on that. All right, now, the whole thing is we don't have to spend this way anymore. Now they're here. Okay, they're not going to make the playoffs. They've got a very expensive, old, fragile, one-dimensional roster. They're not the rebuilders. They're not going to go into next year saying we're not going to compete. You know they can't do that. What's the one way then that they can be winners next year? Because there's only one way to do it. What is one way, the only way, they're going to win next year with this, with what they've got on hand right now and the holes they've got to fill to compete in this division and win? What do they have to go do?
The same thing they did in the 50s. Eliminate the reserve clause, go back to 16 teams, get the Kansas City Athletics to give them players. Are you suggesting spend?
Yes.
But who? On who? Like, I've looked at the free agents this year. It's like Michael Conforto might be a top 10 free agent. It's bad.
My point is that is bad management.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst. That's the worst. I mean, then you become the Mets. Like, I mean, the Mets just, like, we know, and, like, again, you know, one day we're going to have merch that makes this official. We are the only pro-labor baseball podcast. But we know spending in free agency does not work. It does not work as a team-building exercise.
It doesn't.
Unless you're the Rangers.
I mean, to an extent, but the Rangers also have a pretty, they've also done it for, like, three quarters of a season. And they have a pretty robust farm system that has, you know, filter this out. I understand what you're saying. It works when it works, right? It's like winning in the postseason. But as a general concept, you know that if you sign six big free agents, all of a sudden you look up and be like, oh man, that guy's got a 103 OPS plus in year one of that contract. Well, that's going to go well. I mean, what is Trey Turner hitting right now? I mean, you know, like, we just know that these deals are nightmares.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paulo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
They spent 5 years with one thing in mind, and yet look where they are. They're at the same square on the board. And that to me is just like, that's poor management. Yeah, baseball is weird. Things happen and all that. But if you're standing in literally the exact same box that you were trying to escape and spent 5 years making decisions trying to do it, and yet here you are, maybe even worse now because it literally is like the only path to turning this around is to blow by the tax and just like go crazy on like a market that probably doesn't have all your answers. It's either that, right? Or what? You play the kids? Like you have no idea what these guys are. None.
The kids they've tried to play over the past few years and they've never been good. I mean, I think, yeah, like it's the inability to create that pipeline.
So what's it left them? The same bad choices as they had years ago.
Right. But it's like the same bad choices, though, from it's almost closer to like 2005. And even then, they had A-Rod and Jeter. Like, they don't have that right now.
I keep going back to last year at the break. They were 64 and 28. Like, I wonder if that's like sticking in their head. Like, they don't have to go back to 1998 to figure out something that worked. It was working so well right up until the break last year. I think that's got to be just a little bit confusing if you're so invested in this team and you're building this team. It worked just back there. And I don't know exactly what's different other than the players are much worse. You know, that's my big takeaway from comparing that first half to the Yankees now is you look at worse. Some of that's age. You know, DJ LeMay, who's older. You've got Giancarlo Stanton. He's older and hurtier. You know, but it's just a worse throughout the roster. Like, what can you take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect Aaron Judge to hit 62 home runs every season and be a 12-win baseball player. That's a big one, right?
But around him, everyone around him.
That's a significant part of why they were great. And they don't have that, right? Like, they're not getting what they got from Nestor Cortez last year. They're not getting what they got from the catching position in the first half of last year. You know, they're worse pretty much everywhere around the diamond.
So this is why when I look at their failings, it goes beyond just what's happened in the last calendar year. It's how do you put yourself in this position, okay? How do you put yourself in a position where, I mean, this is massive when you think about it. They're wasting the front end of Garrett Cole's contract. Aaron Judge's prime is going to be gone like this. And like he's already unfortunately taken like a fluke injury that's taken a bite out of that. Right? So that's two guys right there. So my question is, how is that any different than the Angels conversation? You got Garrett Cole and Aaron Judge on your team at the same time in their primes. And they're going to this year not even play in a playoff game. And potentially next year not play in a playoff game. right? Because, like, okay, look at next year. Is it crazy to be like they're going to miss the playoffs back-to-back years? No, it's not. Tell me how you're going to fix this.
Man, it's just crazy to see a franchise waste the primes of two elite potential Hall of Fame players. It's just crazy. They're the only franchise doing it. I can't think of anyone else
I just said
engaged
one,
in such. Oh, did you? I'm not really listening.
That's okay. They play in LA, fake LA.
Anaheim. They play in Anaheim, buddy.
Yeah, Anaheim. So, yeah. How are they much different, man? Like, when you think about it.
They won 99 games last
year.
Okay,
fine. Like,
they won 92 the year before.
They haven't won a pennant since 2009. They haven't even gotten to the finals since 2009.
It's true.
You know how you win the World Series? Two words.
Gotta get to it.
Tyler Matzek.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They just haven't had, like, that
Cody Ross.
That moment, Cody Ross. You know what I mean? That's how you win a freaking World Series.
Well, they haven't played in one since 2009, for Christ's sake.
So the thing that the Yankees, that their internal belief was for quite a long time, right, is the same thing that the Dodgers believe and the same thing that the Rays believe and all the smart teams believe, is that the playoffs are a crapshoot, okay? They all believe that. Or at the very least, they'll all tell you that as soon as they get eliminated. But they all believe that the playoffs are a crapshoot. And one of those years, this is going to be the year that Yasmani Grandal goes off in the postseason and we win it all. Or, like, this will be the year that, you know, Anthony Rizzo turns back the clock to 2015 and we win it all. Or DJ LeMahieu stays healthy. Or, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, can run again. Like, whatever it is, right? Like, that miracle thing that happens to every team in the postseason. You know, that crazy sort of thing that it takes to win. But they haven't had that thing happen yet. And their argument is, well, how the hell, you know, like, we're getting there. We're getting into the tournament. We're getting to the ALCS. Like, and I do think there's some merit to what they were doing to get there. But there's also some merit to being like, well, why do you lose to the Astros every year? What are they doing to you? And what are they exposing in you that causes you to lose to them every year? And should you do something to correct it? And they tend to, like, undercorrect for it, because I think you can really do some damage if you overcorrect. They just haven't threaded the needle on learning from the postseason without being too beholden to the results of it.
And so now where do they stand?
Yeah, they're screwed. Yeah.
They're screwed. Yeah,
they're in a bad spot.
So this is what I keep coming back to. It's like, okay, dude has gotten them to the playoffs just about every year and, like, had legitimate World Series contenders for many of those years. That is all true. But right now, as of this moment, they do not have a path to even making the tournament in the immediate future. Talking, like, not just this year, but, like, next year too, and maybe even the year after that. All right? Tell me how. And, like, that, I don't know how else you can describe failure at this scale than being stuck when you're the New York Yankees. You should never be stuck. You're the New York Yankees. Like, what are you doing? So, like, this is, I know that baseball is fluky and whatever. I get it, all right? But that doesn't explain the decision-making that put him in this spot. That might explain the results on the field, absolutely, all right? But it doesn't explain being stuck right now. They're in a spot where they have nowhere to go. They've got no actual clear path to contention for the next year or two or maybe three. That's really bad. That's bad work. That's bad decision making. That should be telling you that you got to reevaluate some things about this process, and maybe you got to reevaluate the people who have installed this process, because this process has made you stuck. They're no different right now as far as, are they going to compete next year, than the Colorado Rockies. There is no clear path to it. There isn't.
Mark, like, you're out of your mind.
Fundamentally, there is not.
I'm going to make an analogy here. Would you say that Brian Cashman is the Buck Showalter of GMs?
No. Hey, the last time the Yankees finished with a winning record, you know who the manager was?
Buck Showalter.
Yep, and it wasn't his fault then either.
he's a sick man, Grant.
This Yankees talk.
Okay, the Rockies point was a bit much, but, like, look.
Grant's moving on. Grant's on another planet.
But you guys, like, this is like one of the premier franchises in the sport that's been really well run for many, many, many years by somebody who's really good at his job, and yet they are totally stuck.
How differently would you feel about this if Anthony Volpe was a 4-win player instead of a 2-win player right now?
Maybe a little bit differently, but like, you know.
How differently would you feel if Jason Dominguez had like a 900 OPS instead of like a 750 OPS
yeah,
in
right.
Somerset?
So that, look.
Right? Like, look, it's just fit, like, I get what you're saying. I definitely believe that the organization has to tweak some of their processes. They need better results with the development system. That has to be, you know, looked at. I think presenting them as that stuck, I don't know just yet. They also are the Yankees.
But so what's the path then? Because I'm willing to listen to that argument, but like for the life of me, Andy, I don't see it, dude, except for like the prospects all of a sudden adding 200 points to their OPS.
They would have to pitch as well as they can, because we know they can really pitch, especially if they're healthy. They have a very good
Carlos
pitcher.
Rodon is never going to be healthy.
They have other pitchers besides Carlos Rodon. You know, Gerrit Cole's like going to win the Cy Young most likely.
Uh-huh, that's
you
one.
Know, they have Mark. Stop. You know that they're a well-run organization when it comes to pitching. You know this.
Dude, but still, and by the way, like they
who's
they
on the Mariners, Grant?
No, I think that the path is a little bit different than what you're saying. It's not necessarily spend, it's not necessarily develop, although those would certainly help. It's taking this lump of clay and all of a sudden you've got Nestor Cortez. It is taking, you don't want Aaron Hicks? Okay, we'll take him. Back when those things did well, that was like the secret sauce at the Yankees. It wasn't just the conveyor belt of prospects. It wasn't just how much they spent. It wasn't just the baby bombers hitting bombs. It was, you know, they could just make players better, source players better. They could fleece other teams. They're not doing that now, but that would be the path for me. If you're saying, what's the path over the next 2 years? It's some shit we're not thinking of.
It's getting a 2-win season out of Matt Carpenter completely out of nowhere.
Yeah, stuff like that.
They used to do this. They did it last year. Mark, I'm with you. Like, I would not pick them to win the division next year. I would not, you know, pick them as a World Series contender. But I think sort of the idea of moving on from Cashman based on this, even if this is not, this season is not an anomaly, that's tough, man. That's pretty tough.
Look, I'm not advocating that. Okay, what I'm saying is that, like, there's people that seem to think that, you know, we should dismiss that idea, like, out of hand, just totally. And I don't think that's the right thing to do either. Like, I mean, I also think, you know, there's that the old quote about the British Navy. Sometimes they'd execute an admiral just to encourage the others. All right? Like, dude.
Is that a real quote?
Yeah, it was. Someone wrote it. Somebody in France. Like, I just read it recently. But anyway, like, yeah.
Someone in France?
Yeah, some French person. I don't know. I went to community college. Anyway, like, the point is, like, sometimes, like, there is a value to shaking it up in that regard. Like, and I know that, like, that is not, you know, something you can quantify or measure or whatever. But you know, I think when you have a process that leads to this outcome, I think everything should be on the table. It should be up for discussion because, you know, again, on-field results and luck, I get all of that. But they're here because of process and decision-making, too.
Okay, you know, I just figured out what this reminds me of. This reminds me of, do you guys know the greatest Twitter thread of all time? You don't want to be out here. Do you guys know that thread? It's about this guy, and he's telling Del Curry is getting a divorce, and he's saying, bud,
oh yeah,
you don't want to be out here. You think you want to be out here because you're not out here. Like, you don't have the cholesterol to be out here. That's like what if the Yankees get rid of Brian Cashman. To me, it would be like, you don't have the cholesterol to be out there. Like, you're getting a GM who's into charcoal ice cream. You're getting, you know, like, it's not going to be the same. It's like the grass is greener sort of thing. I don't know. I think I get what you're saying about a change in how sometimes it's just time to move on. I mean, that's very clear. You've seen it before in different industries. I just don't know if we're there yet for Cashman.
Right. So, and that's fine. That's a legitimate argument, right? Like, I don't look at it like that's the obvious thing to do. I also didn't think that firing poor Dylan Lawson was the answer either. Boy, that really worked out well.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was just, you know, look, that's the, that's when you start rearranging the deck chairs,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, that was the red flag that told you that this was an exceptionally bad year for them.
Yeah. They are unwatchable. So I said, I mean, they're a really brutal, it's a brutal product.
And what is Sean Casey going to do there, really? What's the mayor going to do with it? Like, you know, half the lineup are guys that shouldn't, you know, be in a starting lineup.
Folksy quips. He'll have folksy quips.
I mean, you know.
I saw him, you know, with the beard shaved. Scary.
It's a weird look.
I mean, I just hadn't seen Sean Casey without facial hair in so long. I was like, who is that man? It's like, oh, Sean Casey.
Mama, who is that man? We were supposed to do like half the show on the Yankees and half on the Mariners. I think we got like 9 minutes left. Let's just keep going Yankees. Let's just drill down.
Hey, Mark, did you listen to Blueberry Boat like we asked?
No, I did not. Like, did not have time to do that. Should I? I thought it was a bit.
Listeners, if you want us to have a segment where Mark listens to indie rock from the 2000s and then gives us a one-minute report, please tweet at him at Mark Carrig.
See, okay, so I don't... Mark, what do you listen to? Like, I have no idea what your musical tastes are.
I'm sure it's stuff that'll offend both of you. But just think about, like, the most popular, kind of common... you know, music you can possibly think of, I probably listened to that. Like, I just remember putting on, I remember this was a GM meetings years ago, and I had a rental car, and I'm driving, and I'm with Pedro Mora, used to work with us, you know, great writer, and then Andy, right? And so, like, hey, can we get a ride? Yeah, sure, come on in, right? Now, this is me. I got the rental car place at the airport, like, get all set up, put like, I just find like the most typical top 40 whatever music and throw it on. Grant, I turned the car on and the radio, the top 40 station played like four notes. And I look back and like Pedro and Andy were like melting like ice cream on a 100-degree day. Like just like, like they were like a combination of just like outrage and disgust, right? Just like, oh, change that, like, that's the music I listen to. Stuff that makes people like Andy McCollum melt.
Fair
like
enough.
That, you don't remember this? It's like I was just like, oh,
I don't remember
God.
This at all. No.
Oh man, and I was just like, holy cow, guys! I'll change the station. Okay, okay, you know, let's not offend your sensibilities with like 2 seconds of top 40 music. It might have been Taylor Swift for all I know. Like whatever it was extremely offensive. See, and so yeah.
Andy doesn't do well with problems with technology, and he doesn't do well with, like, One Republic.
I do like the song they did with Timbaland. That was a good song.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry, Mark.
I was just curious, because, you know, Andy seems keen on you reviewing some unlistenable indie rock from the blog rock era.
I like music fine, but, like, we were in a meeting the other day with Steven Nesbitt. And he was just like, I didn't really start listening to music until some later date. And like the other eight people, were, just, including Andy, were just horribly offended.
I didn't
and
say like, a word. I wasn't even there. What were you talking about?
Okay, you were there in spirit. Anyway, like they were all just like, oh my God, that's terrible. And like I'm sitting there going, oh, it's kind of the same way. You know, it wasn't like, I didn't grow up with music like all over the place as far as like, you know, the kind of stuff you guys listen to. It never became an obsession for me that it is for like... other folks. So, you know, if it's on the radio, I'll probably listen to it. Now I got a kid, so I try to like expose her to a bunch of different stuff. So like actually Nick Picaro, one of her friends, like suggested some music to me a few years ago, so I'll throw that on in the car sometimes. A dude named Curtis Harding, and you know, my daughter will listen to that because I kind of want her to hear different stuff. So anyway, it's like now it's I basically listen to whatever she's in the mood for. There you go.
You know what my kids damaged my musical taste with is that, so my oldest was born in 2008, and then she's sentient by 2010, right? So she's aware, she's repeating things. And so that's when I was like, oh, I can't put on this hip-hop album. She'll start repeating those words. And so since then, like, I just have this gap. Like, everything that's happened in hip-hop and rap since then, like, I don't know what's going on. And I never thought that I would be such an old fuddy-duddy crusty guy. But it happened, and I blame my daughter.
Dude, add Britney Spears on. And Rosie goes, Daddy, what's a womanizer? I was like, shoot. Just like he said, Grant, like, time to turn that off.
Yeah. Rosie, let me tell you about a conservatorship.
In retrospect, we were all a little bit too hard on the Free Britney guy. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I feel bad when people go viral and they don't mean to.
I mean, that's every time I tweet at this point. You know,
you go
that's
viral.
Not true anymore. No one cares.
No one cares.
No one cares. Someone, I forget where it was. Someone asked me on a recent road trip if I still lived in Los Angeles, a person in baseball, and I was just like, no, I just don't matter anymore. And they were like, yeah, that's about right. So
that was good. People always, yeah, they'll come up to me and be like, hey, you still write for the Giants?
For the Giants.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, my parents still do that. I mean, my son, he writes for the Giants.
Are you still writing for the Dodgers? Like, yep, sure. Yeah, you know. Mostly just about one Dodger. But anyway, pre-sale comes up after Labor Day. All right, Woo-hoo! Let's go.
When's it coming out?
Anyway, next year.
Okay. Mark, when's the book on the A's coming out?
Oh, my God. Oh, shirt. My God. I got worn out for that the other night, too. Holy
I want to read it. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just
man, that hurt my feelings, curious man. Customer. Of all people. I took your side last week in your wins debate, and this is what I get, man.
It wasn't a debate.
Do you know how many stupid people who listen to this show contacted me to tell me Grant was right?
Not a single person was on your side in my mentions.
No, not one person reached out and said, Andy, that reasonable argument you made, totally get it. Everyone's just like, it's a stupid stat. And I'm just like,
Grant, don't you have one of children? They're all children, right? Like one of Grant's like old Usenet dorks reached out, didn't they?
You know, so I picked the first Usenet baseball prospectus guy that came to mind, and I just said Keith Woolner. You know, I could have just as easily said Joe Sheehan or Nate Silver or whatever. And he reached out on LinkedIn. He's like, someone told me he mentioned me on the podcast. Like, thanks. You know, I guess that just means like that we're old. And yeah, no, that's we are.
Getting a DM on LinkedIn from Keith Woolner that says, my ears are burning. You're talking about me.
The thing is I had to, God, like, remember how to log into LinkedIn. I made LinkedIn just to get in contact with this one guy when I wrote the history of Mother's Cookies. I wrote like this big feature, like actual day journalism.
Wait,
and
when did you do this? I love Mother's Cookies.
Oh yeah, it's on this. It's on the Athletic. Like if you go on there, there's this.
We ran that.
Yeah, I was very proud of it.
Do you remember 2020?
Yeah, it was pandemic-y. Oh,
that's true.
I wrote about Hulk Hogan's rock and roll album.
Wait,
we wrote about everything.
You did?
Yeah.
Which one?
The only one. Hulk Hogan and the Wrestling Boot Traveling Band?
I had that CD in college. And I played it at parties. Like that was
it's so good.
The one with Hulkster in Heaven?
When the Hulkster comes to heaven.
Oh, yeah, the one with Hulkster.
He did that.
Grant.
Oh, my God.
Grant, I'll send you the link.
I want to be a Hulkamaniac. Have fun with
the guy. I talked to the guy who wrote all the songs with the Hulkster.
JJ McGuire. For me. Yeah. This is for me.
Can't believe
I'll
you missed it.
I'll send it to you. It's so, it was the thing I was the most proud of writing in 2020, I think. Because that was an album I listened to all the time as a kid. I was a big wrestling fan. And so, like, I know all the words to, like, you know, the Wrestling Boot Traveling Band.
That's
Hulkster
great.
Hulkster in Heaven. Did you know, by the way? So Hulkster in Heaven is about this idea that he met a fan who was dying at Wembley Stadium. The Hulkster never wrestled at Wembley Stadium.
He might not be on the
like,
level.
Like, SummerSlam was there in 1992. The Hulkster wasn't on the card. It's just, like, completely invented out of whole cloth. It's beautiful.
Listen, I listened to it ironically in college, but, man, I got a lot of play out of that at parties. And I just entered all my CDs into Discogs like a normal human being. And the Hulk CD is one of my most valuable because CDs don't hold their value, but the Hulkster CD, baby, that's valuable.
Yeah, it's not on Spotify.
Oh my God. I
there
did
it
not
is.
Yeah, I'm clicking the link right now.
I talked to this guy who like played in versions of Shudder to Think who redid the entire record. Like, he just recorded it all himself. It was all, yeah, this, I reported so much about the Hulkster's rock and roll album.
Okay, Mark, you read my mother's cookie article. I will read Andy's Hulk Hogan article. Have you written something that Andy can read? No,
he wouldn't want to read this. This was since we're talking about pandemic jams, like, I had the, Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball story.
Oh,
like,
good. I saw that one.
Who made up the names and whatever. And, like, I was expecting to do some actual reporting like Andy did for his story. And I got it done in, like, one LinkedIn message and, like, a 45-minute phone call. So, anyway, that one was fun.
You don't know what it was like just to get super high and listen to Hulkster in Heaven. And we might cut that. All right, this has been episode number 62 of The Roundtable. We will be back next week to talk about things that we've written in the past that we had no idea. So we'll be back. We'll talk baseball because that's what we do. See you then. I want to be a Hulkamaniac.
I was very wrong.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.